Pesach presents us with an interesting mitzvah. And that is L'man tesaper be'oznei bincha es asher italalti be'mitzrayim. You should tell your children, in the ears of your children, how I was mitalel. Anybody know what mitalel means? Mitalel means, open the dictionary, you'll see that mitalel is translated as abuse. Right? But Rashi translates it as I laughed at Mitzrayim. I, like, it was funny. So the plagues are supposed to be funny, but we don't really see the humor in the plagues, right? Because, I don't know, they're pretty not such nice things. So what does Asher Italalti, what does the Kadosh Baruch Hu want from us? So we'll get to that, but the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, there's a mitzvah to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? We have three parshios that tell us the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Torah extends, right? A lot of times we find stories in Midrashim and things that happen to our enemies that is not in the Torah. The ten plagues are in the Torah, and not only in the Torah, they're very descriptive. And Chazal tell us a lot of things that they derive from the Psukim. And what I want to try to do today is try to go through those makos and see what happened in those markers and why. Okay, so the first thing that we have to know is that when Moshe runs away from Mitzrayim, right after he kills the Egyptian, and he goes to Midian, and there while he's with his father-in-law's sheep, he ends up in the desert, and he gets to the Midbar, to the desert, and there we have HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He didn't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he sees the snap, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, go take Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. So what's Moshe's first reaction? Who, me? Like, you know, ani aral peh, right? V'aral satayim. Peh, right? Peh is the words of peh, right? The peh, and the satayim, no, it's just kvad peh v'kvad lashon. I'm heavy on the peh and heavy on my tongue, right? So I cannot really speak so clearly, right? All my la doesn't come out so clearly, right? And later on, when Moshe sent again to Paro, right? When he starts giving me the makos before makos dam, so Moshe says to Kadosh Baruch Hu, says, I'm aral spataim. Now, aral means cut off, right? So he cut off his speech. Not only did he not speak clearly, he also stuttered. He spoke like this. So that's Moshe. And Moshe says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you want me to go speak to the powerful king of Egypt and tell him to send your people out? Well, you know, I have a brother. He's, you know, very competent, and he's already another, and he's older than me. You know, why don't you send him? So after a while, HaKadosh Baruch Hu kind of convinces him by getting upset, more or less, and Moshe goes to take Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. And what does he do? The first step that Moshe does, he goes to Paro's palace, right, where Paro is usually found, right, where the kings reside, they reside in their palace. So he says, first, before he goes to the palace, he comes to Bnei Yisrael, and he says to them that Hashem sent me to take you Jews out of Egypt. So they said to him, wait a second. We know that we're in Egypt, and because that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Abraham that we'll be in Egypt for 400 years. Now, how long were they in Egypt? 210. So you know what? It's not time. So what does Moshe say? And that's like a secret code, right? Because I'll tell us there's a secret code over there. And they know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Moshe. So he said, you know what? Fine, but why? Why do Bnei Yisrael get out of Mitzrayim early? So we get a hint of this, right? Before Kadosh Baruch Hu sends Moshe, it says "Vegam ani shamati et na'akat Bnei Yisrael asher Mitzrayim avidim otam," right? "Vayizkor et briti," and I heard them, right? And Rashi says, why did Kadosh Baruch Hu take them out? Rashi says because they did tshuva. So we see over here, thank you. We see over here that the reason they came out of Mitzrayim was because that Mitzrayim sort of like took the job, right, of enslaving the Jews, but they took it just a little bit too seriously. And they enslaved them in such a way that they prevented Am Yisrael from living. Literally, they prevented them from living, and we'll see later on. So, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, take them out. So they go, and Moshe and Aaron go to the palace, right? Now the palace is surrounded with guards, right? That's what palaces do. And Chazal Palace not only is surrounded with guards, he had all kinds of wild animals there, trained the wild animals, I hope. And Moshe walks straight in. And he's like looking behind, and nobody's there, right? All the Jews, all the people that were supposed to come with him, they kind of disappeared. So Moshe and Aaron end up before Paro, and they said, send Israel out. And Paro says, who said I should send them out? Well, you know, Hashem. And he says, wait a second, I have a book here. He opens his book. He sees a list of guys, and Hashem's not there. I don't know who he is. Who is Hashem? Mi Hashem? What's he say? Mi Hashem, Asher, what's it? What's the pasuk? Here it is. So he says, "Mi Hashem? Who's Hashem that says I can take? I have to send them out." So Chazal learned from this when he says, "Who's Hashem?" and he says this, he means that I myself am a god. And they learn it from a few places, right? One of the places they learn it from is if we read the psukim carefully, right? Nakas Dam, Hakadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, "Go out." And meet Paro. Where do you meet Paro? So it's like this. Lech el Paro babok. He'll go to him in the morning. Hine yotze hamayma. He's going to the water. I assume the Nile River. When he tzavta likrato al sfat hayor, and stand al sfat hayor, but we already said, hine yotze hamayma. Right? So why is he yotze hamayma? Because Paro held himself to be a god. So what would he do? Right? Because he has to go to the bathroom every so often. So he'd go out, he'd sneak out in the morning, and he'd go to the Nile River, and, you know, do his business, and come back, right? So I assume he also took guards with him because, a king doesn't go without guards, but see, the advantage of being king is that when you get back to the palace with your guards, there's no guards to tell the tale. So if you get my drift. So Paro goes out, sneaks out to the river. Moshe comes to him and says, Paro, You need, and then Paro's getting all anxious. He says, what do you want? And he's talking slowly, and Aaron's translating, right, because Aaron's like talking for Moshe. And Paro's saying, I really need to go. So Moshe says, but you need to send the Jews out, and then Aaron translates, and Paro's like getting all antsy, right? There's a clear description of this in Medrash Tanhuma. And Paro says, fine, I need to go to the bathroom. What do you want? He says, listen, if you don't send the Jews out of Egypt, all your Nile River will become blood. So we read like this: Va'amarta alehem, Hashem Elokei Ha'ivrim shlachani alehem, shlach et ami v'yavduni. And bazot edaki ani Hashem, hinei anochi makeh b'mateh asher b'yadi al ha'mayim asher b'yog, v'netchu adam. The water in the river will become blood. The hadagah, not only that, the hadagah asher b'yor temut, the fish in the Nile River will die. Uba'ash ayor, ba'ash means it will smell bad, right? Because some people drink blood, but nobody drinks smelly blood. So not only did the blood, not only did the water turn into blood, it also smelled bad. And the Egyptians cannot drink the water. And Chazal tell us not only did the water in the river turn into blood, also the water in Anarotam, their rivers, all their rivers, the Al Yoreim, the Al Agmeim, the Al Kol Mikvei Meimeim, every body of water, the Yudam, and not only that, the Yudam, Vayadam Bechol Eretz Mitzrayim, Ubaitim Ubaavanim. Also there was blood in the trees and the rocks. And the trees and the rocks are, where else does it say in the Torah, Eitzim Ubaavanim? Eitz Vayevan, right? Eitz Vayevan refers to Avodah Zarah, right? Whenever it says Eitz Vayevan in the Torah, we know that it refers to Avodah Zarah. So not only did the Ye'orbe came down, also their Avodah Zarah, Chazal tell us, were dripping blood, literally. And we know, like this. So Paro goes back to his palace, then he comes out again. Because that's what he did every day. Right? In order to be a god, if any of you ever try this, a big idea of being the god, you know, is a big show, right? So he comes out secretly to the Nile, right? He does his business, he goes back. But then he has to do his show. So he comes out with everybody, right? Because when they actually hit the ER, what does it say? It says, Vayasu Ken, Moshe Aaron Kasher Tziva Hashem, Vayarem Bamate, Vayach Et Amayim Asher Bayor, Le'enei Paro, U'le'enei Avadav, right? All Paro's slaves came, and the Ramban says not only did Paro's slaves came, it was this thing, the king goes out to the Nile every day. Now the Nile in Egyptian culture, traditionally, is not just a body of water, it's also, it doesn't rain so much in Egypt, so what they did is they dug little, you know, canals, and they would water and get all their water, and all their fields got water from the Nile River. So the Nile River was a big thing. It sort of represented the livelihood of Egypt. And Paro used to go out to the Nile River every day, and I don't know if you measured it like we measured the Kinneret, but what happens is the Nile would go up towards him, right? Because when Yaakov came down to Mitzrayim, he blessed Paro, right? I guess not just one Paro, because there's a few kings called Paro, but he blessed him that when he goes down to the Nile, the Nile will sort of come up to him. And Paro told his slaves, "You see, the Nile is coming up to me." This was a tradition in Paro kingdom that when the king would go every day to the water, and the water would come up to him, and they'd say, "Wow, even the water recognizes the fact that you're a god." And Paro says, "Not only am I a god, I also created the Nile River. Why do you think the Nile comes towards me?" Right? So that's why when a Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, "Do the dam," he uses a unique word that's not in any other of the Makos, and he says, "V'yadu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem," right? They will know. "V'yadu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem bintoti et yaldi al Mitzrayim," right? They'll know that I am Hashem. I am the God, right? So because that Paro is a god, so to speak, and the Nile River is sort of like his god, right? Because Nile is also kind of god because it also waters everything and gives them all their livelihood. So the first thing that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to hit is their gods, right? Because that's what you do when you first start a war. You first take away the sense of security that the people have. So first the Kadosh Baruch Hu takes away their gods. Not just the Nile River, also the Yitzim Ve'Avanim, also their tzalim, all their other avodah zaras. So dam, in Makas dam, we have two things that happened, right? A, the Yeor becomes dam, right? And it's the only Maka, by the way, that actually changed its properties, right? We don't have any other Makas that something changed properties. We have dam changed from water to blood, but Tzfardeya didn't change from anything, right? And neither did Kinyan and so on, if you go through all the Makas. Dam is a unique creation, it's a new thing, right? So that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was also showing him. Not you. You didn't create Li Yar Van Yasativ. You didn't make the Yar. I did. How do you know? Because I can take the same Yar you have and turn it into blood. It's not, if God took a different thing and made it into blood, then Paro said, "You know what? You can't touch my Yar." No, your Yar, not only did you not do it, I can also change its properties. The Mitzrim, Paro calls his Khartoum, right? His own wizards. And he says to them, "What do you say, guys?" They said, you know, big deal. A guy comes to Egypt and does magic. This is like the key magic kingdom, so he's maybe a little bit better at it. But we can also make blood. And it says, "Vayasu ken ha-mitzrim belatehem," right? "Vayasu mitzrim belatehem ken." They also did it. Lahat. So lahat means smooth. Smooth. Lahat means smooth. The shorosh is lat. The shorosh is lat is hidden. Lot is hidden, and it's really a speed of hands, because only God can change things, right? He can turn one thing to be into another. A wizard can make it look as if he turned one thing into another. They also did it with their lot, with their speed, with their hidden. Lot is hidden also, right? With lot is covered. So they also did it belatehem. And then Paul's not impressed anymore. So what does it say? it says, "Vayasu ken chartumei Mitzrayim belatehem." Vayechazak lev Paro v'lo shamalehem. Right away, after the chartumim says, Paro doesn't listen. Now, it's a little bit surprising, right? Because we know like this. Chazal tell us that Makas Dam, the nation got rich. How'd they get rich? Because since all their water became blood, and not only blood, it was blood that they couldn't drink, so they need to drink something. So how do they drink? So they see a Jew, he's standing there, he's got a water. He says, Maisha, give me that cup. So he takes the cup, it turns into blood. So, it was water a second ago. So he drinks it, it's blood. So you know what? He takes a big, you know, Chinese bowl and they drink together. So the Jew gets water, and the Egyptian gets blood. So what's going on over here? You know, so they had to actually buy, the water in order for it not to turn to blood so they can drink it. So the Chartumim take the power, you know what? We could also make blood. Big deal. They take the cup of water. Oh, it's blood. Wait a second. Here's a 20. Here's the blood. So you know what? It's not such a big idea because they had to get the water from Aaron. They just had to buy it off of him. So Paro's not impressed. Fine. Paro's not impressed. So he says, big deal, you turned it into blood. I can also make things turn into blood. Let's say though. Blood. Why did blood happen? Why did Makas Dam happen? Chazal, in the Medrash we see an interesting thing that although the enslavement is not so descriptive, right, in Parshas, in the previous Parshas in Shmos, it's not so descriptive, we can learn from the Makos what the Egyptians did to the Jews. We can learn from the Makos what the Egyptians did to the Jews. And this kind of answers what we asked in the beginning, Asher Hitalalti Mimitrayim. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't do things just for the fun of it. He's not sadistic. Everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is a mida keneged mida. What you did, I will do to you, right? That's the Makos, right? With the exclusion of Makos Bechoros, the purpose of the Makos is not just to get the Jews out of Egypt, right? We see that throughout the Makos, because the HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, he will not listen, right? So the purpose of the Makos is not just to convince, right, convince Paro, because we see Makos Bechoros, everybody dies, oh, you know what, just go, right? But the other Makos are for us, let's rephrase this, are for us to see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does to our enemies. That was the important lesson, right? Right, there's this old joke, right, that Nasrallah, the revenge is for God, and our job is just to make the appointment, right? So usually we don't see God's revenge. We don't see it. In this world, we don't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's revenge. We don't see how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the world. But in Mitzrayim, in the Ge'ula of Mitzrayim, the purpose of the Makos was, yes, for us to see. It's the first time, this is the basis of the Ramban. These Makos, this Yetzias Mitzrayim, is the basis for the Emuna of Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in many different ways. Right? So the purpose of the Makos are so we can see how God interacts with nature. God's power over nature. God takes the Yor and turns it into Dam. Right? So, what happened? What do Chazal tell us that the Egyptians did that they deserved that all their drinking water should turn into blood? So, there's two things in the Dam, in the Yor. One is that the Yor became, they couldn't drink water, right? And B was the Yor, right? So the Yor we saw, why? Because they believed in, it was their God. So that's the first thing we hit. But why blood? Why blood? I mean, you can turn it into any other thing, right? You can just turn it into slime, something you can't drink or eat. So blood, Chazal tell us that after Moshe came, the first time to Paro, right? And Paro says, I will not send the Jews, right? I will not send the Jews. So Paro says to them, Nirpim atem nirpim al kenem tzoakim lelmov, right? Nelchav and avda. You guys, you have too much time on your hands, right? How did it work? The Egyptians used to give them hay, right? And they used to make their blocks. They used to make building blocks. So Paro says, no more hay. You collect your own hay. So what did the Jews do? They went to the fields, right? In the fields there's lots of hay, right? Lots of extra hay, right? After they take apart all the weed and stuff, they have all kinds of stuff that you can use to make building blocks. So they come to the average Egyptian field. What does the Egyptian do? He shoos them away. And that's why it says, Vayafet ha'am, right? The Ya'am were mufat. They went all over Egypt to find material for their building blocks. And they had to build 600 blocks a day, right? And if they didn't make up their quota, they'd get beaten to death, literally, right? So they were all rushing and running around to get their blocks done, right? And not only that, we know that in Mitzrayim, the Avodah, the women would do the men's job, right? So the woman over there doing the men's job, trying to mix the blocks, right? And she's holding her baby, and the baby falls in. So what does the Egyptian do? Leave it! Right? Paro had a sickness. His Khartoumim said he needed to take a bath of blood, of children's blood every day. So this is what he did. So Paro, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, you want blood? You think you're so important? Here's blood, as much as you'd like. For 7 days, you don't have anything to drink, and everything turns into blood. That's Makkah's dam. It's the Makkah of their gods, and it's a Makkah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows that he is the God. Now we get on to Makkah's Tzfardeya. Makkah's Tzfardeya is frogs, right? Frogs are a nuisance, right? Anybody have any frogs as a pet? No frogs? Oh, I used to have a frog when I was a kid. Okay, so frogs. Well, with the frogs, so it says like this. It says, in the frogs, it says that I will bring the frogs, and where will the frogs be? They will be everywhere, right? Right. What's the description of the pasuk? Where is this? Here it is. It says, first like this, "Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Amor El Aharon, Netet Yedcha B'Matcha, Al HaNe'arot, V'Al HaYehorim, V'Al HaAgamim." Right. So first thing, all the body of water. So we know that not just the Yehor had frogs, right? Every single body of water had frogs, right? They had a cup; it had frogs in it. Okay. Then. When Moshe tells Paro that he's going to do the Makkah Tzfardeya, what does he say? The Shayarat HaYor Tzfardeim, right? The Yor will have Tzfardeim, and out of the Yor will come the frogs. The Alu Ba'u Bebeitecha, and they'll come in your house. Ubechadar Mishkavecha, and in your bedroom. The Al Mitatecha, and on your beds. Bebeit Avadecha, Ube'amecha, and in your nation, and in your slave's house. Ubetanuecha, right? And in your ovens. Ubemishavotecha, and in your food. Right? So the frogs are literally everywhere. So much so, Chazal tell us, they went into the oven even though it was firing hot. It was burning hot. Tzfardeya was a nuisance. Yes, it was very frustrating when you take a drink of water and you have a little frog inside, or when you walk outside and there's like big frogs all over, right? That's in the different sizes, right? It's very frustrating, right? What's worse than finding a frog in your food? Finding a half a frog in your food? So it's very, very frustrating. But Chazal tells us that wasn't a big deal, right? So they had frogs. It was uncomfortable. Chazal tells us the frogs used to go inside them, right? They used to go inside them, and they used to yell, "Kuki, kuki," right? That's the lesson of Tanchuma. "Kuki, kuki," in their stomachs, right? And when it's interesting, when Moshe goes out to pray, right, after Paro's like, he can't take it anymore, he says, "Just get these frogs out of here." What does Moshe do? He goes, and he goes like this. It says, "Vaitzak." "Vaitzak Moshe al Hashem al Dvar HaTzfardeim," right? Moshe yelled to Hashem al Dvar HaTzfardeim. So there's two things we want to derive from this pasuk of Chazal tell us. "Vaitzak Moshe." Why did Moshe have to yell? We don't find it by any other Makkah, Vayitzak El Hashem. It was too noise, right? They couldn't take the noise, right? And he yelled Al Dvar HaTzfardeim. He yelled on the Dvar, on the noise of the Tzfardeim, on the speech of the Tzfardeim. They couldn't take it. So, what do we learn from this? Tzfardeya. So, in Tzfardeya, we have a new phenomena. that we don't have in all the other makas as well. That the Sfardim went into the ovens, and Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah learned Kavachomer from them that they can also go into the ovens of Kiddush Hashem, right? So we see that Sfardim is not just a nuisance; it's also Kiddush Hashem, right? Everything that we do is for Hashem, right? So the Tzfardeh will go into the oven. By the way, what happened to the Tzfardeh that went into the ovens?
Nothing.
What? Nothing, right? They didn't die. Right? When it says that all the Tzfardeh died, what does it say? Vayamutu ha-Tzfardeh'im min ha-batim u-min ha-chatzerot u-min ha-sadot. Something's missing. What happened to the Tzfardeh'im b'tam ha-recha b'misha v'techa? Right? They didn't die. Those Tzfardeh'im, wasn't there Zachar, but Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah learned something from this. If you're Mosa Nefesh, HaKiddush Hashem, nothing will happen to you. Right? That's what we learned. We learned that from the Tzfardeh'im. So, what can we learn from this that the Mitzvah did to the Jews? Right? We said from the Makkah, we also learned what they did to the Jews. So we see two things. We see, A, they couldn't really live without the Jews, without the Tzfardeh'im being in their lives, right? So the Jews couldn't live, they couldn't live without the Egyptians being in their lives. What does this mean? And this will also explain the yelling part. It says in the Medrash that when Paro made a Gezerah, that you should throw all the children into the Or, all the children into the Or, how did he know which woman was about to give birth? So it goes like this. It says that they used to send their teenagers, right? They used to send them into the neighborhoods of the Jews. And the teenagers used to listen carefully for sounds of yelling and screaming. They used to listen for women giving birth. They used to listen for that sound. And when that sound was, they called the Gestapo or the police, whatever you want, and they used to come and take the children and put them in the yard. So says the Kaddish Baruch Hu, are you looking for noise? You want noise? I'll give you noise as much as you'd like. You want noise? Here's noise. Right? Nirpim atem, nirpim atem, him tzu'akim leimor. Right? Nirchavan avdat, et Hashem alakeinu. Right? That's why they don't have anything to do. That's why they are yelling, let's go worship Hashem. You want yelling? He's yelling. Why are they yelling, let's go worship Hashem? Because of that. All they want is to yell to Hashem. That's all they want. All they want is to do Kiddush Hashem. Right? Even the Sfardeim know that worshiping Hashem is important. That's the Sfardeya. And it's funny because Paro comes to Moshe and says, get these Sfardeim out of my life. And Moshe says, when? When do you want them out of my life? So what's Paro say? What would your immediate reaction would be? Now. Now? No, Paro doesn't say that. What does Paro say?
Tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. Right? Vayomer Moshe leParo, Itpa'er alai lematay ha'atir lecha ulavadecha. Vayomer lemachar, for tomorrow. Says the Sifzei Chachamim, what are you waiting for? So the answer is the Sifzei Chachamim, because Paro says to Moshe, he does the calculation. He says, why is Moshe coming to me now and says, when should the Tzfardeim go away? Because they're about to go away, right? He's a magician, right? And my magicians can also make frogs, right? His magicians, we see they make frogs in this instance. It's a Vayasu ken chatumim belateim, right? By the way, we don't have that same. Paro is not impressed anymore, right? Before, right after the chatumim made the dam, what does Paro say? Fine, they made dam. Right? So he didn't listen to the dam, just like he didn't listen to any other thing Moshe says. Here, it doesn't say it anymore. Why? Because Paro had such a big headache, and his chatumim come and they make more frogs, and he says, I have enough frogs. What are you giving me more frogs? So, he would want them going right away, but he knows the frogs are going to go right away because why else would Moshe come and ask him now? When should you get rid of the frogs? So says Paro, you know, I have a trick here. I'm going to prove Moshe wrong. I'll say limachar. You know what? Tomorrow. Today doesn't work out for me. Tomorrow's a good day, right? And so Moshe goes down in Davins, and the Tzfardeim go away tomorrow. Okay, so that's Tzfardeya. Yes?
About
The blood goes away after 7 days. Now, it's interesting you ask. It's interesting you ask because the after blood, right? What does it say? Unlike some of the other markers, it says like this. It says, "Vayimaleh shivat yamim achar kot ha'yishem et ha'yor." That's it. 7 days passed, and what happened to the yor? It stopped being blood. The blood went away. Why? Because the blood's very existence was miraculous, right? But Tzfardeya, they came into being miraculously, but they were there, right? Moshe had to daven for the Tzfardeim to go away, right? And that's when the Tzfardeim piled up in the streets, and they rotted in piles, right? So now, so far, God's hit their gods, and he's caused them a little bit of discomfort. Yes?
What is Pharaoh doing by asking for everything to be gone tomorrow, and then
Because he was saying that it's basically a natural disaster, the frogs. So, but Ella what? Moshe knows when it's going to go away. So that's why Moshe's coming now and asking me, when should the frogs go away? And I'm going to say right away, because he's on some suffering. And then he'll go, poof, see, the frogs are all gone. Then he says, you know what, tomorrow. When is it tomorrow? And then you can see that it's not natural, because Moshe has control of when the frogs come and when the frogs go.
So they did go away tomorrow, so then didn't Pharaoh say, oh, Moshe has control over it, or
didn't
he say that he has control
over it? Well, we saw that the Chartumim made also frogs. They could also make frogs. Mm-hmm. Right? So Moshe can make frogs. Right? Maybe not in that magnitude. This is how they rationalized it. We can do what you can do. Except you can, right? Not like the song, anything you can do, I can do better. We can do what you can do, but you can do it better. Right? That's how they sing it. So, fine. So it's not such a... It's fine. So you're a bigger wizard than we are. Fine. So we'll give you, like, you can be the head of our guild. So what? Yeah. Right?
So can they have tried to get rid of all of the blood? If they were...
All of the blood?
If they were thinking that they're so good as magicians, then by them trying to, if they could bring the prime, if they could say, look at this cup, I can make it blood too, and they could take it away also.
They couldn't.
Right.
So how is that not... Well, how do they rationalize that? Well, I don't know, but I assume that they can say something like this. So you made blood, and we can't change your blood into water, because that's your magic. But then again, you can't change our blood into water, right? Moshe didn't take their blood and change it into water, so we don't have power over your magic, but. But that's how magic works. I don't know so much about magic, by the way. But maybe that'll be the next class. I'll prepare it. But So maybe he's such a powerful, it's such a powerful spell, magic, whatever, that we cannot reverse it. But you can't reverse ours, maybe either. They didn't try. Magic. Well, we'll speak about magic in keening. We'll get to the magic. Tinim. We already started a little bit, Belateyem Ken, right, that they brought the frogs. And in Tinim, we'll expand that a little bit, okay? Tinim. Tinim is the third maka. And it's the third maka that Aaron does, right? Because Moshe does not hit anything that is on the ground, right? We'll get to that when we get to the later maka. We'll sort of expand that issue if we have still time. But the Tinim, Moshe comes to Paro and says, no, Moshe doesn't come to Paro, excuse me. Moshe just does the kinim, right? By Yom HaShem and Moshe, El Aaron eted matcha ve'ach et afar ha'aret, nahi ala kinim b'chol ha'aret mitzvayim. Right, so the kinim, what became kinim? Afar ha'aret, right? The dust of the earth, right? All the dust of the earth, right? Vayasu ken vayet Aaron et yado, v'mateu vayach et afar ha'aret, v'tehi ha'kinam, and the kinim were in the Adam u'babeima, in the man and in the animals, Kol afar ha'aretz haya kinim. All the afar ha'aretz became kinim, right? They had to dig in order to get dust. Everything was kinim. Imagine that, right? Lice. You might not have to take medrash literally when it comes to descriptions, but if you want to get the drift, then the medrash says, hold on. I don't find it in the Medrash. The Medrash says that the kinim were bird egg size.
Oh, wow. I thought they were really small though. That's really
weird. So the Medrash says that there were different sizes, and not only were they different sizes, there were different colors, right? Because there's different lice. There's white lice and there's dark lice and there's all kinds of lice, and all the kinds of lice, right? I think 14. The Medrash says. Different kinds of lice, different sizes. It's really frustrating lice. And if any of you have ever read, if you want to know how bad lice really is, if any of you ever read stories on the Holocaust, concentration camps, things like that, one of the major problems that the Jews had was the lice, right? Because what the Nazis did was prevent them from having any hygiene, right? They couldn't take care of themselves. And they couldn't wash their clothes. And they had to wear the same clothes, right? And that's what lice caused the Nazis to call the Jews a filthy Jew. That's where it comes from, right? You're so filthy, you're full of lice, right? You're not even a human being, right? So again, the Midah Kenegad Midah over here is very clear. Right? The Medrash says that they used to take them to Israel and make them clean the floors and the streets. That's not for us. That's for filthy Jews. Right? You're full of life anyway. Why don't you take care of all the garbage? Why don't you take care of everything? Right? That's the lice. And when the Khartoumim, right? By the way, here, before, the Khartoumim, power calls in the Khartoumim. Here, Paul is not interested anymore. After the Tzfardim, right? After he has something in Tzfardim, and the Chartumim come and they make more Tzfardim, he says, you know, I have enough Tzfardim. Here he's not asking for any more lice, because, I don't know if you know, he has enough. Because, right? Even the floors of the houses, imagine this, even the floors of the house were lice, because the floor was basically dirt, right? So it's also lice. Everything's lice. And the Chartumim, Vayasu, HaChartumim Belatehem Leotzi Takinim, the Mitzvim tried to take the kinim out, the Lo Yacholu, and they can't. Why can't they? Because how does their magic work? They would bring exterior force, right? We said before in Makas Dam that only God can create new things, right? Can change a property of something, right? From being water to blood, right? From being man to animal, right? And from being any change of property only God can do. The way magic works is magic makes it appear as if we made something new, right? Okay, so we call the forces of dark, or whatever you want to call them, or shadim, right, or kochos atuma, and we make them bring us another frog. And here it looks like I brought a frog, right? Except I use some magic power. But I didn't create that frog. That frog came from someplace, right? And the kinyan, they couldn't do that, right? Because I'll tell us, that magic doesn't have control over a bria pchuto kisora. It has no power over a being smaller than a grain of barley, right? And mice are small, so we can now bring out the same mice that you brought. So it's true they have bigger lice, but we cannot do that. So what's their reaction? Right, at this stage, well, if this can't be magic, can't be magic anymore, then what is it? So what do they say? Etzba Elokim hi, right? This is what? The finger of God. Wait a second. The finger of God, what's the finger of God?
Decree?
I don't know what the finger of God is, but it's certainly not the hand of God, right? And a hand, I have more control over my hand. I can move my hand in different places, but my finger is very, very limited, right? And what they were saying is, Etzba Elokim, you're right, there is a God, he did create the world, but he's not really running it anymore. It's like the Etzba, it's the result of his Yad shifting in the beginning, right? This is the Etzba Elokim. This is a result. This is a natural disaster. And you'll see what time it'll go away. And because of this, right, and if you read the Pasukim carefully, it says, Vayumur chatumim el paro etzba elokim hi, right? It's the finger of God. And therefore, what would be the, right, if it would be just like, oh, this is the power of God, what should be the result? So Pharaoh should come away and say, no, send the Jews out, right? No, vayechazak le paro, because it's etzba elokim, vayechazak le paro, right? Right, the Rambam says, it's not a yad, right? Because it's Etzba Elokim, it's just a natural disaster, it will just go away. So Paro doesn't even bother telling Moshe to get rid of them. Don't even bother. V'lasha ma'alehem kasher diber Hashem. And he didn't listen and he did not send them out. So we finished the first phase of the three markers, which Aaron did. And then, this is, now we're up to Makas Arov. And he says to him, "Ki im ein chamesh alechet amin, ani mashliach b'cha, u'be'avadecha, u'be'amecha, u'be'batecha." Wait. I'm sending all upon you and upon your slaves and upon your nation and in your house the arov. What are the arov? Wild animals. Not only there are they on Egypt, the gama adama asher hem aleh, also the adama became part of the Arov. What does this mean? Right? You know, the Medrash tells us, when the Arov came, all the wild animals came. And wild animal is, I'm not a zoologist, so if anybody here is, excuse my French, but an animal does not feel comfortable unless he feels like he's in a natural habitat. Right? He's not going to do anything courageous, anything to harm anybody if he's not in his natural habitat, right? If you go to zoos, right, they try to make for the animals, they try to make the cages, or the safari, they try to make the cages feel like their natural habitat. They try to change it around, bring them water, whatever it is, right? The waterfall, whatever it is, they try to make it look like they feel like their natural habitat. So when God made Egypt a big zoo, he had to make Egypt feel like their natural habitat. So what did that do to Egypt? It turned it into a jungle and a forest and a desert. Everything is in Egypt, right? Just like the zoo is a mini thing, so all of Egypt is like that. Imagine that. And the Makkah was like this, right? They would come in the house and they would lock the door. So stampede! They'd run out, right? Or they'd have like animals dig in from the ground, right? They dig in and they destroy the houses. So Arov not only ate their children, says they say the Medrash, it also destroyed Egypt, right? It caused Egypt to be destroyed. And this is taking the Makkahs up to a new step, right? Before it caused discomfort. Major discomfort, but discomfort. Now Hashem took Egypt and basically destroyed it. And the midah, what's the midah keneged midah over here? And midah keneged midah by Arov is the Egyptians. The Medrash tells us like this: that the Egyptians used to tell them to go out and capture the wild animals. Shayu Mitzrim Amru L'Yisrael, Tzu V'Aviu Lanu Dubim V'Arayot, go out and bring us Dubim, bears and lions, bears and lions, so we can play with them. And in ancient times, when they meant play with animals, they don't mean nicely. They mean, let's take a Jew and see how he fares, right? Let's take a, let's, you know what? let's take a Jew and have him fight with the bear and see how long that lasts, right? The Romans used to do things like this with their slaves. The Egyptians certainly did it with their slaves, right? And they made the Jews also babysitters. So when the Jew would go out to babysit, well, what happened with the, in the Arov? He'd go out with five children, the Medrash says, and come back with none. So he says, what happened to all my children? He says, well, let's see here. The first one was the lion. The second one was the bear. The third one, I think it was a tiger, but I'm not sure, right? This is the Arov. Why Arov? Why? Right? So we learn all these things, but Arov, when the Egyptians took the Jews to fight against the animals, they say basically like this. This is the hierarchy, right? This is sort of like the food chain, right? There's us, the Egyptians. Then there's the wild animals. Then there's the Jews, right? That's how it goes. So kind of, wait a second, let's change the food chain. Bechol Eretz Goshen lo ye Arov, right? Right, first Makkah, where it says there won't be any Arov, right? So we know that also the Jews didn't have them, right? Because the Medrash. But Arov, it's the first time where it says that the Arov didn't go to the place of the Jews, right? So God says, wait a second. First is the Jews, then the animals, then the Egyptians, right? Let's reverse the roles over here. Why don't you see how that feels when your children go out and don't come back? How would you, right? When you send that Moshe out to go get the lion and he didn't come back, you didn't seem too concerned, right? So now you are concerned. So that's the Arov. The Arov comes to show Mitzrayim that you put yourselves on top of the Jews, it will not be like that. We'll reverse the roles. Okay. That's Arov. And then we're off to... You skipped one. Dever. Dever is a makom. It says like this. Vayom Hashem Moshe, Baal Paro, Yadibate Elav, Koman Hashem Elokei, Vim Shalach Ami V'Yavduni, right? The regular thing, go send the Jews. And then it uses a new term that wasn't used before. If you don't send them and you still hold on to them, hinei yad Hashem hoya b'miknecha asher b'sadeh b'susim b'chamorim b'gmalim b'bakar u'batzom dever kaved meod. Right? On your horses and all your animals will be a dever kaved meod. Dever means plague, right? And dever comes from the shoresh davar. So not only did the animals die, also their davar died. Things broke, right? The guy would come to his house, and his mixer was broken, right? Or if it was a guy, it was his computer, right? And things would just break, right? You go out to the field, things were broken. Dever just broke things. And all their animals died. And the Medrash tells us, דבר למה? מפני ששמו את ישראל רואי בקר ורואי צאן ורואי גמלים בהרים ובקעיות ובמדבריות, right? And they used to make them shepherd their cattle בהרים in the mountains in the valleys and in the deserts. But so this medrash appears in a few places, this description exactly in the mountains and valleys and deserts. They used to send them out far away. Why? Kedei shelo yifru ve'irbu. So they're not fruitful and multiply. So they kind of told them, let's kill out the Jews in the, right, the demographic war. So Hashem says to them, you need shepherds for your cattle? You need shepherds for your cattle? I'll take care of it. Himei yad Hashem hoya. The hand of Hashem will be b'miknecha, right? It doesn't say hoya and any other thing. Hashem will be in the cattle. I'll shepherd them for you, no problem. We'll just kill them off, and you won't need any shepherds. It's not a problem, right? And the Midah Kenegad Midah is clear, right? Because it's about preventing them from multiplying, right? And We're talking about the death of animals, right? Okay. And now we're on to Shechin. Shechin starts out like this. Yeah.
They set the Jews out on what, like, with the shepherd commission, that they wouldn't have children.
No, I don't say it was fruitless, but they used to send them out.
Just to let them have a kid. And then.
Yeah, because if you're separated from your wife for extensive periods of time, then you know that would be the result. Yeah.
I thought Deborah meant
bees,
like some
Dvorah means a bee.
That's not what the...
No, there is a shita that Arav was something like that. Mm-hmm. Similar, used to sting them, but the Chazal say we know that it's not, because unlike Tzfadea, where they piled up in Egypt and they sort of sunk the area, yeah. In Arav, all the animals dispersed. Lo nishar mitzvah mefilochad. Right, even one wasn't left in Egypt.
So, but then why was things broken? Like, and what was the point of everything breaking? Like,
no, that was an arrow.
Well, the animals died because, like, they didn't. God said, you know, you didn't want to multiply, and we'll kill them.
Right. Because in ancient times, when you were rich, right? When the Torah wants to describe the wealth of Abraham, or of Yitzchak, or of Yaakov, how does it describe it? It says he went and he had cattle and sheep and slaves. That's what it is. That's wealth. And while wealth is represented in Dever, also those who, the simple Egyptians, not the wealthy ones, who didn't have so many cattle for them to send out. They also had their things, their wealth, right? Their stuff, right? We define wealth by how many things we have, right? You have a nice car, you have a nice house, right? So they defined wealth also by things, right? And their things broke, right? As a general rule, the slaves would take care of all their property, right? So it would make sense for all their property to be destroyed. Mm-hmm. Right, so the dever shows that the purpose of the enslavement originally, right? The original reason for the enslavement was to keep them busy, right? If you're working all day, right, and all night in somebody else's house, and come back, right? Even those who came back, they were just tired, right? There's a theme, and some of the addressing, there's a theme throughout the Makos, right? Right, and Dam, they say, why Dam? Because they didn't let the women tevel, so they couldn't be with their husbands, right? And in Sfardea, because they didn't let, so they went in, they used to bite their genitals, so they can't have triovaria. Like, Kinyan, it goes on and on, they used to scratch, and these sort of stuff. This is a theme throughout the Makos and some of the Midrashim. How they prevented the Jews by enslaving them, the purpose of these, Avodat Perech, right? What's Avodat Perech? Avodat Perech means that they used to build something and they used to destroy it, right? That's Avodat Perech. We'll see in a layer marker by the Barad, we'll see clearly, and I'll show it in the pasuk. The Avodat Perech was whenever the Jews built something, the Egyptians destroyed it. They said, "Do it again, Tony or Moshe," right? That's what they used to do. And why did they used to do that? Because when a person does something, right, he builds something, he creates something, then there's a certain sense of satisfaction that comes with that. Even if you're a slave, right? Slaves, being to slaves, right? Like Avram Hashem told Avram that the Jews will be enslaved. He didn't mean that they'll be they'll be worked hard like this. They will be slaves, right? Slave can be different levels of slave. Some slaves, right? We know some slaves like being slaves, right? Let's say you're a slave for an important person. It gives you a certain amount of satisfaction and power, right? So slave has also a satisfaction, right? Even today, in modern day slaves, right? So you have satisfaction. Your satisfaction is at work, is creating something new, even though, you know, you can't take home with you, but you at least feel a sense of accomplishment, right? Imagine somebody went to work every day, right? And worked hard. And the end of the day, his boss breaks it. His boss breaks whatever he does. So he's not getting anywhere. That's a form of torture, right? That's part of the thing, besides dehumanizing them. That was one of the ways, let's rephrase that. That was one of the ways of dehumanizing the Jews is by destroying everything that they did, right? You can't, everything you do is just worthless, right? You filthy Jew, you clean this floor and we'll make it dirty again. What the difference is it make? But you go on the streets, you just throw stuff on the streets, right? And just, you know, okay, right, they might as well pick it up. And sure enough, you see like a whole wagon of Jews, and when Mitzri are hitting them, you know, go clean out, right? This is what they did, right? And if you think that I'm exaggerating, right, all you have to do is read a couple of books on the Holocaust, and you'll see that I'm not, right? These are things that didn't happen just 3,000 years ago. These are things that happened 70 years ago, right? These are things that happened throughout the history of the Jews, right? So I said to somebody, so wait a second, the Holocaust is really worse than the enslavement in Egypt? And the answer is no, of course it's not. It wasn't worse at all. Just the Nazis had more advanced technology to kill off the Jews, right? So they had the weapons and they had the gas chambers and all that. But this enslavement, this form of enslavement, wasn't the end of it. This is not the end of it. But as I said in the beginning, the here Kadosh Baruch Hu is showing us that all the things that the goyim do to us will not go unrevenged. How do we know it will not go unrevenged? We look back. We look back on Egypt, right? So Dever would make sense that all their things broke, right? Every other property represented, right, who they were. Okay. So in Makas Shechin, which is the next marker, a unique thing happened, right? Because I'll tell us. How many markers were there, by the way?
Ten,
right? So the answer is there were 9 markers and 1 Makas Bechoros, right? Makas Bechoros is a separate marker. Where the first 9 markers were for to show us, like I said, the Makas Bechoros, his purpose was to get the Jews out. And as soon as Makas Bechoros came, the Jews got sent out. Right? So Sechadah, 3 Makas, Aaron performed. 3 Makas, Moshe performed. 3 Makas, HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed. 1 Makas, Moshe, Aaron, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed together. And what Makas is that? Shechin. And how do we see this in the Pasuk? And we'll explain in a second what that means. I mean, I'll try to explain to the best of my knowledge, right, what that means, because I don't really know. But it says like this: Vayomer Hashem el Moshe ve'el Aharon, Kulachem, both Moshe and Aharon, Kulachem melochof lechem piach kishan, right? Piach kishan is ashes, right? And then it says something like this: Uzrakom Moshe Hashemayma. Moshe and Aaron picked up the piach kishan. And Moshe threw it up to the Shemayim, the Einei Paro, in front of Paro. And then something else happened, right? The Hayale Avak al Kol Eretz Yisrael. So first thing, so Moshe takes Melochof Nechem. Melochof Nechem is like this much. This is Melochof Nechem, right? So it's 2 hands full. So Moshe takes his 2 hands full. Aaron puts his two hands full on Aaron's hand. And there was already a nace there that Moshe was able to hold so much stuff, right? And Moshe takes it up and throws it up to the sky. And what happens? Another miracle. Usually when you throw something up, right, there's a right? What goes up must come down, right? So here, that's not what happened. V'hayal avak, excuse me, V'hayal avak al kol eretz Mitzrayim, V'hayal Le'avak al kol eretz Mitzrayim, the avak, the dust, was the was on all of Egypt, spread evenly across Egypt. It's another miracle. And then what happens? Then there's something almost unrelated, right? They took the avak, they throw it up to Shemayim, and then what happens? V'haya al ha'adam v'al ha'bema l'shchin porach ha'ba'avuot, right? On the man, on man and on animal, it became a shchin porach ha'ba'avuot, right? Like chicken pox, right? There were pox, right? Boils, trout, boils? Okay, so... Yeah. Yeah. In 1 second, all right? The marka became on the animal and on the man. So these are three steps, right? One is we take it from the adama. One is we throw it in the air, right? So we have adama and we have air. One is ala adam wa ala bema, on the man and on the animal. Those are the three steps in Shechin. Who gets hurt from the Shechin first? It says, "V'lo yechlu achartumim la'amod lifnei Moshe." The chartumim couldn't stand in front of Moshe, right? Until now, there were big shots, right? Every time Moshe would come, they'd stand there and say, after the Kinyum episode, right? They stopped reproducing it, but they kind of said, "Okay, so you know what? You outsmarted us, right?" In Shechin, "Lo yechlu achartumim la'amod lifnei Moshe mipnei Hashchin, ki haya Hashchin b'chartumim u'b'chol Mitzrayim." So here's a hint, right? The Shechin became on the Chartumim, on the wizards, and then, only then, on all Eretz Yisrael. So the Chartumim couldn't stand before Moshe because they were embarrassed, right? Until now, what happened? We had the Mark of Dam and Sfardeya and Kinim, which were uncomfortable. And we had Dever. And we had Arov and we had Dever, right? And those were uncomfortable as well. But until now, nobody got hurt. I mean, they got hurt, but not directly. Right? This is the first time where there was actual maka on an actual human being. And now, the Chartumim could not stand in front of Moshe. Why? Because Moshe hit them. Until now, he didn't hit them. Right? And now they can't say, "Well, you're a bigger wizard than I am. We can do the same thing." Because what are they going to do? Make themselves more boils? Like, what are you going to do? Right? "Hey, Paro! We could do the same. Watch." No, it's okay. I got off. Right. So the Shechin was the first marker. Like I said, was the first marker that was on men. So you asked before, which markers were Aaron, which markers were Moshe, and which markers were Kadosh. And the answer to that, we have to understand what markers Aaron did, and Aaron did what markers. All the makos that were on the ground. All the makos that were on the ground. Dam, Tzfadeya, Kinim, all those makos were on the ground. Why? Because Aaron represents... Aaron is what? Aaron is the peh of Moshe, right? He brings Moshe's koch. He brings Moshe's shamayim. Because Moshe, right? The Mara says, why did Moshe stutter so bad? Why can he speak so loud? He couldn't speak. Why? Because what?
Hashem wanted that,
right? For the calls, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So on a deeper sense, right? Because speech represents taking an idea, a thought, right? A machshava, something spiritual, even, and putting and bring it in, into something that's physical. Right? That's speech. And Moshe was sort of like up in Shamayim, right? And we have Midrash saying Moshe was very tall. Moshe was up in Shamayim, and he couldn't bring that out. He couldn't express himself, right? Speech is when you can express your ideas, right? Some people are very great, and they know a lot, but they can't speak, right? It doesn't take away from who they are as great people, but they can't take their ideas and put it in a fashion and bring it out. So Moshe needed an Aaron, right, to take that spiritual and bring it into the physical, right? To take that speech and put it in. That's Aaron. So Aaron is taking a Kadosh Baruch Hu's Makkah and putting it in the Gashmi, in the Aretz, right? There's four Yesodos, right? There's fire, and there's wind, and there's water, and there's earth, right? So earth and water are the most physical ones, are the more physical ones, and fire and wind are the less physical ones. And Aaron gave the makos on the earth and the water, the more physical ones. And Moshe, which is more ruchani, what did he do? He did the ones in the air, right? What makos did Moshe do? He did part of the Shechin, but the Shechin is also wind. And he did the Barad. Barad was water and fire. We'll see later on. And he did Choshech, right? In the air. Those are three makos on Moshe. Because Moshe is in Shemayim. Moshe?
Yeah.
Moshe did Arad, right? And Arbe, right? The wind brought in the Arbe.
Locust.
And Choshech, which is also in the air. Those are the three Moshe did. Have you ever seen a locust cloud? The locusts come in a cloud. Like, we'll get to locust. We didn't get there yet, okay? Barad is, we'll explain what it's like hell, but we call Barad hell, but Barad in the Makkah wasn't exactly hell. We'll get to that. Okay. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, what Makkah said HaKadosh Baruch Hu did? Some choros. Choros. Arov. And what else? What? No, Dr. Sissam Ashalos.
The parashah.
Gever. Arov. And Makkas Bechoros.
Is Arov like on the ground? So when Aron has done
that? Yeah. But what is unique about the Arov?
They came with their own natural habitat.
Okay. That too. But Arov is also, it affected the animals, right? So God has power over living beings, because only a Kadosh Baruch Hu controls a person's soul.
So Aaron did, which one did he do? Part of
Aaron did, again, from the beginning, Aaron did Dam Tzvadeh and Kinnis. And Moshe did. Okay, from the beginning. In the right language. Aaron did the three first plagues, blood, frog, and lice. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Moshe did the hell, and the locust, and the darkness.
Okay.
Okay? I'm translating, right? Okay. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu did, right? Arov.
Which is
the wild beast. And Dever,
which is
the plague. It's a plague that killed the animals, right?
Brokenness.
Brokenness? That's what they call it?
No.
I think they just call it plague. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I just call it Dever. How's that? Okay? Makas Bechoros. Makas Bechoros, Ani v'lo Malach, Ani v'lo Saraf, right? Those three things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did affected animals, living beings, Chaya, Nefesh, right? Right? And you might ask that also frogs have like a little life in it, right? Also frogs have a little life in it. So the truth is the frogs came out of the water, and they sort of came from the water, right? They came into existence from the water, the frogs, in the water. Arov, on the other hand, are Kadosh Baruch Hu taking existing animals and moving them into Egypt with their natural habitat, but he affected those animals, right? And he caused them to eat certain kinds of human beings and not other kinds of human beings. And he affected the animals, right? And Deborah as well, he caused the animals to die. in the Makos Zechoros, he caused the people to die. So you can see, all the Makos are, by the way, they're a state, right? So we have first earth, and then water, and earth, right? And then, and also wind, right? So we have wind, and then fire. What do we have? We have wind and fire together, right? It's also a build-up, right? Because the bar, we'll see later on. Okay, it's a build-up. And also Kadosh Baruch Hu's Makos, right? It was a build-up. It was just first the animals, and then the animals got killed, which is the second step. And the third animals, human beings, actually got killed.
Was that hail was the one that was done by all three of them?
No. Shechin. Boils.
Oh. So we didn't mention it in one of the...
You could throw
black
light
at the earth, right?
Because he hit the earth.
And wild beasts?
Wild beasts is animals.
Mm-hmm. So earth, fire, water,
or okay, there's earth, water, fire, and wind.
What was our contribution to Shem?
No. Aaron and Moshe collected the dust together. Right? They both collected. So how come this Makkah was done by all three forces, so to speak, right? Everybody doing forces, right? This already teaches us Makkah Shin, right? By the question, we already know the answer. The question is, why do all forces join? Because all forces join. All forces are together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We'll see it more clear by the Barad, right? All the forces join to show that Chartumim, right? That you can bring other forces, you can bring darker forces, but when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, all the forces of nature join together, right? The force of darkness is really part of nature, right? It's really a part of nature that we don't know so much about, but it's a natural thing. We're not supposed to use it because it makes it look like a HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not involved, right? It's makhish kochosha pamaya because it looks like a HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not controlling it. But the forces of darkness are really a part of nature. They're a natural thing that a HaKadosh Baruch Hu put in the nature, that there are forces, however they may work and whatever they may be, they're part of nature. They're a new creation that God created to be in nature and maybe to counter spirituality. And you, the Chartumim, can't take that force and isolate it and say it's a separate force. And I'll prove that to you. And I'll take all the forces of nature, all the four elements of nature, and I'll put them together to fight you. With God, with spirituality. I'll take it all together and I'll throw it on you. And that's why who gets hurt first? The Chartumim. The Chartumim get the boils first. And then they're embarrassed. Right? You took what they were and you dissolved it into nothingness. The Chartumim cannot stand in front of Moshe. Okay. So, now that's the boils. In English. And the next marker is Barad. Barad. Somebody said Barad is hell. Well, it's like hell, except that usually hell, even if it's like very heavy hell, they're like little balls. But imagine they're not like such a little ball. Imagine like tennis balls. You know, imagine footballs, okay? Of ice falling down. Now, there is a machlokas in Barad.
How come in Australia it's hot last
year? Yeah. In Australia, all kinds of interesting things happen. Okay, so there you go. So these things, now you can imagine, right? You can probably look it up on the internet and see the pictures. These Barad, these sides fell. Now in Australia, how many balls like this fell?
So many, and billions of dollars, and people died every single
day. Wow. So this happened, and this happened not so long ago in Australia, and...
The houses were all broken, everything.
I can't imagine. I gotta look this up. Okay. So let's say, like it happened in Australia, okay? So you have a big football of Barad falling down, right? And the Barad, and the hail, right, breaks into half. And out of it bursts
fire.
And then what does it do? Not only it broke into the house, it burns it down. Did they have that in Australia too?
No.
Okay. So, okay, so, So the bar is the two opposing forces of nature. What two opposing forces of the four elements are there? Fire and water. And it says in the Midrash that it's like a king who sends out his troops. And it's true that when they're at home, they're bickering all the time, right? Because of rank and whatnot. And when they go out and fight, what do? They go out and fight, right? The war, there's no time for bickering, except if in World War. But they all go and they do a Kadosh Baruch Hu's fighting. And this is a form of saying that even forces that contradict each other in nature, right? The way the Avodah Zarah works, right? What's Avodah Zarah? I mean, we don't know so much about Avodah Zarah today, but we do know that Avodah Zarah is saying that there's certain parts of nature that control certain parts of nature. Okay, that is to say, if you're Japanese, let's say, right? So there's the god of the mountains, and there's the god of the rivers, and there's the god of the kettles, and there's the god of the teapots, and the god of the plate. Everything has a god, right? But if you're right, so different cultures have different gods. And these gods represent a certain force that can control certain elements. That's what these gods represent, so to speak. So we're not going to go into all that, but yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
The Mida Kenegan Mida and Shechin of what they did to Am Yisrael are what they by their mere, but again, was the enslavement, and they did it because they felt in a certain way, right? Everything, right? We controlled those forces of darkness. Even in the Midrash, when it comes to Shechin, it doesn't bring down the Mida Kenegan Mida. Why? Because that is why they did this whole thing, right? This is the Shechin represents the Mida Kenegan Mida. The Shechin represents their moral justification for what they did. That's what it represents. Okay, so back to Barad. So the going say, or the Avodah of Avodah Zarah, those who worship Avodah Zarah say that there's different forces in nature, and those forces contradict each other, right? And that's why there is Avodah Zarah, because they say, right, the God of life cannot be the God of death, right? The God of life cannot be the God of death, and therefore the God of water cannot be the God of fire. They're all my soldiers, and when I send them out, they all fight together. This is the Medrash. It's true about all the Makos, but in Barad specifically, the Sid Lavoi, when the Mashiach comes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will reenact these Makos. What happens to Sid Lavoi? What happens when the Mashiach comes? When Mashiach comes, we see, right? We see that everything, right, I'm sure you learned this several times, but I'm just saying, like, right? So we see that everything that Kadosh Baruch Hu does, everything that we have, is for the good, right? Even the bad things that happen are for the good, the good things that happen, it's all one big master plan, right? So what we see in Asir Lavod is that all of the forces of nature join together to make one plan. Right? So that's why when the Kadosh Baruch Hu brings the Mashiach, he'll bring also Barad. Right? When it come on the Goyim, on the Egyptians, will happen again to all those people who did the same thing to us. The Nazis and the Inquisition and the Cossacks. Right? The Kadosh Baruch Hu will do it again. But we'll see again. We'll see when the Mashiach comes that Barad, the fire and the water all join together and force to do a Kadosh Baruch Hu's biting. One of the greatest things of Barad, one of the Nisim rather in Barad, was that the Barad. Brock, it says like this, Vayacha Barad b'chol Eretz Yisrael, the Barad came in all Egypt, everything in the sadeh, in the field. And they call it a shadeshiber. All the trees it also broke. But what the bar didn't break is the hapishtava se'ora nukata, right? The grains, the little things on the ground, they did not break. The hachitava kusemet, right? The wheat also did not get destroyed. Ki apiloteima, right? They were soft and they didn't break. The bar could have easily destroyed them, those things, because even though, right, like the hail came down and broke the things, and those things can't break, but when the fire bursts, everything burns in fire, right? But that was the nace. Why was this nace done in Barad? For Arbe. Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give them Arbe, the locust. That's why he didn't break. That's why the wheat and barley did not get destroyed in the Makar Barad. So he could bring the locust. And so the locust, he wanted to teach him a very specific lesson. And the lesson is like this. When the locust came, first thing that happened is, what happens the first thing you see locust? You see a big cloud of dark, sort of like coming towards you, right? Usually locust covers a small part, a small area, but here the locust cover all of Egypt, right? You went up, instead of seeing planes, you see locusts, right? It's a bird, it's a plane, no, it's locust. The whole thing is locust, right? It's covered. So much locust that it says in the Pasuk, there will never be such a locust. No, not before, not after. That locust is unique to Mitzrayim. And what do locusts do? Eat. And eat everything, right? In their houses, and right? Because the locust went everywhere, right? Right? Your forefathers and forefathers did not see me until today. Locusts went in their houses and ate everything up. But the Medrash says that when the locusts came, Kivan Shibar, then when the locusts came, some Kwame Tzrim, the Egyptians were happy. Why? Namu. Until now, all the Makas, they were pleasant and this. But locusts, you know what we can do? We can eat the locusts, right? You can't eat dead frogs, but you can eat dead locusts, right? Who said it? Nekabetz, so I'll take the locusts and we'll pickle them and we'll fill up barrels with them and we'll eat them. So it's true that all the locusts came and ate all our food, but we'll eat them. And we'll have food. We'll have more food than we had before, because before we didn't have any trees left, right? Well, we had a little bit of wheat left, but now we'll have a ton of locusts. So the Kadosh Baruch Hu, no. The locust will come, they'll eat everything, and they'll go. Right? So, to answer the question why Kadosh Baruch Hu left those things to bring the locusts, we read in the Medrash. That Arbe Lama, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu be an Arbe? Mipnei Shesamot Yisrael Zorei Chitim V'Seorim. They made the Jews plant wheat and barley. Lefikach Hevi Alehem Arbe. That's why he brought upon them Arbe. Ve'achlu Kol Ma Shezaru Lehem Yisrael. And they ate, the Arbe ate everything that the Jews planted for them. Right? The Jews did not get to eat bread in Mitzrayim. That wasn't a privilege, right? We see in the Midbar what they were given to eat, right? They were given zacharnu, right? The kishuim, they were given squash, tavatichin, watermelons, right? The fruit. They were given some fruit that Chazal tell us were slave food. they were not given human being food. They were not given bread. That they didn't give them. Who planted the bread for the Egyptians? The Jews. So they see the bread, but they cannot eat it. Come to Kadosh Baruch Hu and teaches them a lesson. Or teaches us a lesson. Through them, the Egyptians, right? If you plant, if you make somebody plant and don't let them eat his fruit, I will do the same to you. I'll take your fruit and the locust will eat it. And you will think you have fruit, but you will not be able to touch it. And there was a big gnase after they barreled all of them and they pickled them. What happened? All the locusts left. Right? So much so that it says, Lo nishar arba echad bechol gvul Mitzrayim. There wasn't one single locust left in the entire Egypt. We don't have that in the other makas. We have it in one more makas, by the way, Arav. Excuse me, Arav also. Kadosh Baruch Hu took away the wild animals so they can't enjoy the fur and the lion skin, right? Didn't just die, they left. They came, did their thing, and left. Okay. So that is Arbe. And that brings us to a new Makkah. The final Makkah that comes to teach us Jews a lesson. As far as Asher Hitalalti B'Mitzrayim, I have abused Mitzrayim. And that Makkah is Choshech. Choshech is darkness. Darkness is lack of light. Right? Usually. But the Ramban says that the darkness over here is a new darkness. It's an element of darkness. It's something new that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought. And that darkness was so dark that the Egyptians could not move. They could not, if you were standing, says the Medrash, you could not sit. If you were sitting, you could not stand. The Choshech was not only a darkness, the lack of light, and not only was it a new darkness that came, it had a physical property, right? It was like, it was in the air, so with the space you took, you can't, I can move my hand in the air, because when my hand moves in the air, it moves, the air moves because there's place for it to go. If that air is full of something, I cannot move. That darkness prevents me from moving. A darkness presents lack of direction. Enslavement represents no direction. You enslave my people, you tell them they have no place to go, you also will not be able to go. Not only will you not be able to see, you will not be able to go. There's a big chiddush, the Malbim brings down that Choshech was not just darkness, it was light. The light, it says by Bereshis, right? In Parshas Bereshis it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a light, and he put it away for the tzaddikim. It says the Malbim that God took out that light in Choshech and blinded them. You Egyptians, you're going the wrong way. And when suddenly you see that sudden light, you can't see anything. Everything you did before is wrong. You can't. Where do I go? What do I do? Right? It's that initial shock of surprise when you know everything you did was wrong. And you can't get up and you can't sit down, right? And that's Choshech. That Choshech comes to show the light, says the Malbim. And that's why Chazal tell us that in Makkah Choshech, all the Rishayim died. All the evil people in the Jews died as well in Choshech. Right? They were also affected by, I don't know if they were affected by the Choshech, but they died. They had no direction, they had no place to go, and they died in the Choshech. The Jews, on the other hand, L'chol b'nei Yisrael, haya arba mashmotam, they saw, and Chazal tell us, not only did they see, they would go into the Egyptian house and see what the Egyptian had. And afterwards, when they came to borrow the kelim from the Egyptians, and the Egyptian said, but I don't have any silver plates, and he says, but you do, and there it is, right over there. So the Jews, not only did the Choshech not affect them, in such a way that that it was not dark for them. For them, it was light. For us Jews, the choshech is darkness. We have something similar to this, and the Midrash La'asid Lava, the Gemara tells us that La'asid Lava Motzia Kadosh Baruch Hu Chama Min Atzir, Kadosh Baruch Hu will take the sun out of its case. And for the Rishayim, it will be a Gehenim. It will be a hell for the Rishayim. And for the Jews, for the Tzaddikim, it will heal them. Right? For those who are trying to find the right direction, that light is not blinding. It's light. It helps us see. We can see now where we're going. We can see our direction better. We can better know how to direct our steps. And that's Makas Choshech. The final Makas is Makas Choros, right? Bechoros is a new Makas. And Bechoros we find something that we don't find in all the other Makas. We find two things that we don't find in the other Makas. One thing is, in Bechoros we find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Moshe, at a certain time there will be Bechoros. All the Bechoros will die. Right? You don't do anything, right? Like the other Makas, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. At a certain time, Makas Bechoros will be. And this is the first time we're directly out of an action of a Makkah, people actually died. And the first people to die were the bigger people, so were the Bechoros of the older children. And if there wasn't an older child in the house, the oldest person, the elder in the house, died. All their elders died. Right? If you take away the elders of a nation, the whole thing falls apart. And then Kadosh Baruch Hu says, after Makkah's Bechoros, there won't be anybody to stop. Not only will they let you go, they'll sort of like, you know, push you out the door. That's Bechoros. And Bechoros is done by HaKadosh Baruch Hu by himself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu by himself is the person, is the being that affects people. And if he kills them, Hashem emit, Hashem mechaya, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does it b'chvado v'atzmo, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to know that he will be the one to take our revenge. And Lasid Lavai says the Midrash, like I said a few times, these Makas will be reenacted for Edom and for all the evil people that did to us. And we say in the Haggadah, we say, Vehisha Andala Vaisenu, this is what stood for us and for our forefathers, Shemachol Dar Vador, in every generation, only if they want to kill us. And Ela Shakadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps us. And the Asid Lavai will be able to see that by HaKadosh Baruch Hu reenacting the Makas and showing us that he was with us all the time. Have a happy holiday. You know the story.